Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. Elijah Campbell manning things at the game studios. We switch gears. We talk about the Titans' big win in Seattle and another big one coming up at Nissan Stadium on Sunday as they host the 0-2 Indianapolis Colts. Jim Wyatt, TennesseeTitans.com is where you can find his work, and he now joins us. Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Hope you guys are doing well.
We are. That was quite the win. You were out there. That is not an easy place to win with fans back in the stands at Lumen Field, and it looked really bleak at halftime. It did not look good at all, and yet that team hung in there. They fought, and they had quite the turnaround, quite the second half, and came away with the overtime victory.
Yeah, and it didn't look good really into the early in the fourth quarter. I mean, down 30-16, and giving up some big plays, and you just felt like that the crowd noise and just the way things were going that this team was headed to an 0-2 start, and then Derrick Henry bust off the long run, and the defense started to get some stops, and somehow found a way to win. So. I know week one was not what anybody had in mind. I'll say when I looked at the schedule that came out, I thought, okay, if you're 1-1 after these first two, you're in pretty good shape heading into a game against the Colts with big ramifications early. And then you got some other games on the schedule where if you can kind of get on a roll, you can put yourself in a good spot when that real tough part of the schedule comes up. And here we are sitting at 1-1, and seems like the Titans maybe found themselves again out there as well. So it was a tough place to win, tough place to play. Definitely great to get a win, and you kind of, for the Titans' sake, hope it's a sign of things to come.
We played one of the press conferences last week after our practice, and Mike Vrabel was asked about Derrick Henry's production on the road. And at the time when that question was asked, I was sitting there going, man, that is true. That's a good point. It does feel like he has been really productive on the road. But I was like, let's just go look. Like, let's see exactly if that's just in my head or if that's a reality. Well, it created quite the discussion for the rest of the week on his production on the road. Last year, he went over 100 every single game other than that Packers game on Sunday Night Football at Lambeau Field, where he rushed for 98 yards. In fact, his lowest output outside of that game was 112 yards. He has really torn it up on the road. And here we are talking about a road game where he dominated, over 180 yards rushing. Oh, by the way, 6 catches as well, 3 touchdowns. I know you don't have the answer for it, but you travel with him. You've seen exactly what I'm talking about over the years. Why do you think Derrick Henry's had, is it just a coincidence, but he's had more success on the road than he has at home?
Yeah, I mean, it is a remarkable. I mean, if you look, heading into Sunday, his previous 16 road games, which is equivalent to a season before this year where you had the 17th game bat, his previous 16 games, he was over 2,000 yards in those games combined, just like last season when he went over 2,000. In the regular season schedule. I think one of the keys to winning on the road is just being able to pound the football and to not make mistakes and to wear teams down. And, I think that certainly helps you a lot in your efforts to get out of a place with a win. So I think when the Titans go on the road, they want to lean on Derrick Henry to kind of get it done. And he certainly more than willing to take on that challenge. He's been very good. He is as determined and as relentless of a player that I've ever been around, and just kind of a no-nonsense approach and loves any opportunities he can get. So he is a big reason they won on Sunday. I thought the pass catching element, as you mentioned, was obviously new. He's caught some balls and he's made some big plays after some catches. But to catch as many times as he did and to be kind of a focus there in key parts, I think that was another encouraging sign. And and the big guy shows no signs to slow down. It's really remarkable. And I know people are going to continue to ask, well, how much longer can he keep going at this pace before he wears down? Watching this guy work, just seeing how he's built. I don't see it in the short sight. That's for sure.
You know this because you were on the beat for the Tennessean during his career, now head coach at TSU. Eddie George took a beating. He delivered a beating, too. I mean, he was a specimen just like Derrick Henry. But the game was different. He took a beating. And we all know that after the turf toe, he was just never the same. But he took a pounding. It doesn't feel like Derrick Henry takes anywhere near the pounding Eddie George did in his career. Once again, am I just creating this in my head, or do you believe there's some truth to that?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The reason I feel like that is because I had a conversation with Eddie, I guess it was after last season, and he was talking about Derrick Henry, and I was asking him kind of about how much longer can he keep it going, just getting the heck beat out of him, and he stopped me. He said, Jim, he's not getting the heck beat out of him like I did. I mean, he is able to get into space. He's able to use a stiff arm. He's able to... And obviously, he's still taking hits. He's a big back. He's a big target. He has a tough job, and he's got to grind it out. But, you know, when Eddie stopped me and said, hey, you know, he's not taking big hits, and he's not getting the wear and tear on him that maybe other backs do, that made me look at things a little bit differently because that's kind of, you know, operated under the thinking that you know, he probably was taking the same pounding, and I watched every one of Eddie George's games. But, you know, the more I thought about what he said and the more I've kind of, you know, been alerted to that and looked at it differently, I think what you're saying is right on the money, is that, you know, the reason he continues to go without showing signs of slowing down is because, A, he takes great care of his body, but I think, B, he's done a good job of taking huge hits. Sure, there have been some. I mean, he took a huge one in Baltimore last year, I remember. You know, there's some other times when he's been clocked by big guys, but most of the time he's the one that's delivering the punishment, and sometimes he's doing it with a stiff arm and not his body.
Early on, when he was the head coach, there was times when I was pretty critical of Mike Vrabel, and I think he deserved it at the time. But I've spent a lot of time here kind of the second half of his tenure as head coach of the Titans, really more about praising him because he's this really smart guy, and I feel like he has – I thought early on, Jim, this was just my opinion, that he was just still too much in player mode, and he had his player hat on rather than being a head coach and have his head coach hat on, and I feel like that's changed over time, and I think we kind of saw that in Sunday's game when asked, and I think it was your question, hey, did you consider going for two? And you know, you were in London. I mean, boy, did we have the discussion that week about that. I hated it from jump on that decision. I hated the call. It didn't work out as we know. Once again, it was kind of like player mentality. Let's just go for it. Were you surprised to hear his answer where he said, you know, the way kind of the game was playing out, he was really – never considering going for two in that spot.
Yeah, and I know after the Titans scored, I know I saw on Twitter some people immediately saying, well, the Titans got to go for two here. And I didn't agree with it because I felt like it was one of those games where the momentum had kind of turned. The Titans were kind of controlling the game at that point. The defense was able to get off the field. You know, you don't want to all of a sudden just, you know, kind of give that away by not getting it on one play. So, I think that has kind of shown some maturity on his part and just thinking things through more. Not that he was making bad decisions early, but I do think maybe, you know, there were times where he was more reactionary and maybe sometimes he probably did do things more on his gut, where now he has experiences that he can, you know, take advantage of and learn from that help him make some of these decisions. So, I mean, it was absolutely the right call to get the game into overtime. You know, I'm sure some people were holding their breath before they kicked that extra point because we know that you know, the kicking wasn't a given to get you into overtime either. But once they got there, you know, I felt like the Titans were going to win the game because they were, you know, the game had turned at that point. And I think credit to Vrabel for recognizing that himself.
Talking to Jim Wyatt, TennesseeTitans.com. And, Jim, just a sidebar, are you prepared for the possible pressure of the one-game playoff, as brilliant as the Dodgers are? And maybe against a red-hot Cardinals team, the way it's looking up right now.
No, I'm not. I want to avoid that at all costs, because that is, in those one-game playoffs, anything can happen. And there's no doubt in my mind, if it's the Dodgers in that one-game playoff, that they're going to have all the pressure on them. I mean, I still have hope. You know, there's not a lot of time left in the season. Giants have just not been losing. But it's down to one game, and the Dodgers desperately need to figure out a way, you know, to get out of that one game play-in, because I think the Dodgers can win. I think they're really good, and the pitching staff is really good. I think the Dodgers can win any series. I have confidence in that. But, you know, these one-game playoffs, you know, they're tough, and I don't want to be faced with that.
You're right. It's an incredible team, and to have it all on the line for one game would be really dramatic. So, Jim, let's talk Todd Downing here and what he did to get this thing on track. He was dealt some tough blows, right? Furkser can't play. Luan has his situation before the game. Then you lose Roger Saffold. You know, still not in the rhythm with Josh Reynolds. So you got a lot of things that aren't going right. And then, so I'm just curious what you saw to get it all together. What I saw was great utilization of the multiple tight end packages, even without Furkser. You had Pruitt, Hudson, and Swaim all in there rotating. A lot of times all three of them were in there, but at least two of them. That seemed to stabilize a lot of things, and all of a sudden it looked like the offense it was supposed to look like.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, some good observations and things he did and things he took advantage of. I think, you know, some of it just, like, you know, boils down to the guys just playing better. Like, you know, we saw Tannehill just getting just crushed in week one and blown assignments and getting hit, fumbles, and you know, the wheels came off. And Julio Jones, who uncharacteristically makes, you know, a bad penalty early and just never really looked like himself. And, you know, they couldn't get the running game going. I think, you know, part of it with things he did, you know, scheme-wise and personnel-wise to take advantage of some things. I think another part of it is just maybe it was just a gut check performance for a lot of guys who knew they had to play better. And Julio Jones is one of those guys. The offensive line, even without Taylor Lewan, I thought they did a great job. You know, still not perfect. I mean, I don't know what, you know, what was going on with AJ on Sunday, but he did look himself, and certainly not going to beat up on him. He kind of made light of it himself, you know, on social media afterward. Not that he's not taking his job seriously, but he's at least able to laugh about it. But that wasn't him. I mean, he dropped too many balls he usually catches. So there's still some things that give you a reason to be optimistic that, hey, it can get better. I mean, you got to get your starting left tackle back, have him play better. Hopefully that happens at some point. You got to get AJ on the same page. And you guys mentioned Josh Reynolds. He's pretty much been a no factor so far, and he was brought in here to help. And eventually he's going to get back into the swing of things. You're going to get Furkser back. So there's reasons to believe things can get better. But I think Downing's, you know, kind of settled in a little bit more. I think guys played better. And I think moving forward, there's reason to believe that, you know, there is more upside here.
I like what you're saying there, that there was a stable. I think we're going to look back on this game as one where Downing really found his footing. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. There's other layers. There's other ingredients that you feel like can fall into place as they move forward here. But let's center in on something you just mentioned. A.J. Brown, you said he doesn't quite look himself. Do you feel like it's a physical thing with him, or is it just a guy just, you know, maybe he had an off day? Because I guess when you're worrying about things, you just worry that, you know, he's battled through this knee thing for a while. He's been on the injury report already this year. Just for a guy that young and that talented, I hate for him to have to be fighting this all the time.
Yeah, and he, I mean, it's crazy at the start of training camp. I mean, the first, you know, week, I mean, he would look just absolutely unstoppable. And then, you know, he started missing some practice time, and, you know, probably got out of sync a little bit there, didn't you know, didn't obviously play in the preseason, and I think, you know, I think some of all that has maybe contributed to him being a little bit, you know, herky jerky at the start. I mean, he was somewhat of a slow start, you know, last year. I think, you know, maybe some of it's him just trying to find his way from a health standpoint. I think, yeah, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but, you know, I think going into Seattle, and you know, you got to ask questions about DK Metcalf so much last week. I'm sure he wanted to do well there. Maybe he pressed too much, but he just didn't seem as natural, you know, catching the ball. And I think he'll get there. I mean, I think it was more practice time and, you know, And reality is more attention going to Julio if he keeps making plays like he did Sunday. That's going to open things up for AJ. So I don't have any concerns about him. I really don't, as far as him getting it right and him being a big-time playmaker, because you know, he has looked good in practices of late. I think, there's some things that kind of slowed his momentum from taking off, you know, during the month of August and early in September, but I think he's still extremely talented, and I think he's still going to be fine.
We're used to getting basically zero information until at least Wednesday. Then you get the vague practice report thing. But it sounded like when Mike Vrabel was asked about Lawan and Saffold, there was a little hint of optimism. I think his words were something like, "Hopefully, we'll get those guys back this week." I don't know if he was just trying to throw some cover up there, because I really worried, especially with Lawan and the way it happened before the game. I just shuddered, because I was thinking, ooh, could that be the same knee? Is it, you know, if it happened in a drill like that, sometimes you really fear the non-contact kind of thing. But am I reading into that too much?
Well, I mean, you're right, and you know, Vrabel usually didn't give him much away, and when he did say, we'll see if they're available, you know, at the end of the week or something like that, it did at least give you a hope that, you know, it's not season ending.
Yeah, maybe not a catastrophic thing.
Yeah. You know, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm you know, in my old job, I would be, you know, pounding the pavement.
You'd be digging.
What's good. Yeah, be digging, and I don't have to dig anymore. because if I knew, I couldn't say anyway until the head coach said. So I don't know the severity of it because of that. And it happened right in front of me. I was on the field in pregame. He came out. He was in a good mood. He was running. He was working out. He was ready to go. And then he just kind of a freak thing. And the broadcast picked it up on a camera. He just kind of buckled, and you know, he walked right past me and a couple other guys. And he was in obvious discomfort. And I thought initially, well, that doesn't look good at all. And but the fact that he returned, he was in the sideline in sweats, he was communicating with guys, he wasn't open. I mean, just the body language thing made me think that maybe it's not as bad as maybe it initially looked. And then I think reading into what Vrabel said, you probably could assume that too, but I can't say for certain just because I'm just not chasing like I used to.
Have you reached out to the guy in Cincinnati to ask him if you can buy Mookie Betts his bat?
That was pretty cool. I saw that video last night, and I watched it. My sleep schedule has been so messed up from being on the West Coast and 2 hours difference. I was laying in bed last night. I couldn't sleep. I was scrolling through Twitter, and I saw that play out, and I was trying to listen to it with the sound down. So it looked like the guy for the Reds hit his first home run. A fan caught it. Did Mookie kind of initiate?
Yes, he did.
Didn't get it. So he initiated getting the ball back in, and then that was Mookie's bat. I guess he felt it was a good gesture by the fan. He wanted to do the right thing, so then he gave the bat. And then from what I was watching, it looked like the gentleman who gave the ball to Mookie in turn gave the bat to a fan, but then I think I was reading the comments again because I was trying to do it without sound, without waking my wife up. It sounds like he was letting that fan, the little kid, take a picture of the bat and give him a bat. Okay,
yeah.
So that's, I know the rundown there. So, I mean, I thought that was really cool the way that all played out. I wish the fan would have let the kid in the Betts jersey keep the bat, but was still pretty cool how that all play out.
I mean, to think that he was getting the ball for a Reds player is amazing, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many players do that? It's not a guy on the Dodgers. It was a guy for the Reds.
Yeah, it's very pretty classy, and I love seeing that. I mean, and people with the awareness of what's going on in the game.
Yeah.
This is a big moment for that youngster. So that was cool, and I hope that good karma will work in Dodgers' favor.
We shall see. Jim, always a pleasure. Thank you for the visit, as always. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, sounds good. Y'all going.
Jim Wyatt, TennesseeTitans.com is where you can find his work. And, yeah, it was a great story. We talked about it yesterday where in Cincinnati, the guy for the Reds, his first ever home run. It was his first hit?
It was.
His first hit.
Yep.
Was a home run. And Mookie Betts signals to the fan, hey, give me that ball. And the fan throws him the ball. I mean, think about it. The fan could have easily said, no way, man. I'm not throwing you the ball. I'm out. This is my ball. And he threw it back, and Mookie Betts came out with a bat, a signed bat, and gave it to the fan. Really, really, really cool story. Of course, it has gotten quite the attention, which it deserves. But anyway, it's cool that Jim knew about that story getting back from Seattle. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk more about the Titans on the other side. I want to talk to you about DraftKings, though, right now. DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL, and they are kicking off another week of action by giving all new customers a can't-miss offer. Listen to this. All you have to do is just bet $1 on any football game this week and receive $150 in free bets instantly, no matter what. This football season, also, all customers can swing big with DraftKings Same Game Parlays. Yeah, they've got that in play this year. Same Game Parlays allows you to combine multiple bets for bigger payouts. This week, place the same game parlay on any NFL game, and you will be credited up to $25 if your bet loses. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that code 1025GAME and receive $150 in free bets instantly when you place a $1 bet on any football game. Once again, that code 1025GAME. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.